Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dom Harvey Podcast, brought to you by Generate KiwiSaver and Radix Nutrition. Coming up, Nigel Beach.
It's in our culture now. We get the Kardashians on the television there, and you get Courtney come out and say to Chloe, oh my God, those shoes are giving me anxiety. So we're using the words wrong. Those shoes are not giving her anxiety. She is upset at the colour choice of Chloe's shoes, or whatever it be. But that is not anxiety.
Is sort of a podcast of two halves. In the first half, you'll get to learn a little bit more about Nigel, who he is and what he does. Then in the second half, some info that we can all use to improve our own quality of life. We chat about why Nigel decided to become a physiotherapist and how he ended up working with some of New Zealand's biggest sports stars in many different codes. We get into sauna and cold plunging and how Nigel became close friends with Wim Hof. And we talk nasal breathing and why it's so important for good health. At the very least from this episode, you'll get introduced to a cool person and someone that I consider to be a mate. But hopefully this conversation will give you much more than that. Potentially some wisdom and insights that could make your life better. Just before we crack into it, just a thanks to my sponsors, Generate KiwiSaver and Radix Nutrition. Please, by the way, even though you can, do not skip past this bit. These guys are absolute legends, and their support enables the podcast to grow, so please listen. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. Book to see your local Generate KiwiSaver advisor for a no-obligation meeting. The website, generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. I did this last month, and I switched over to Generate from a different provider, and it could not have been easier. On their website, generatekiwisaver.co.nz, you'll also find a copy of their product disclosure statement. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. This podcast is also sponsored by the legends at Radix Nutrition. Mike and the team at Radix have lofty goals to improve your quality of life through nutrition, and they're doing it all from their incredible factory just out of Hamilton. Trust me, once you sample their products, I have no doubt you will become a raving fan. Check them out. RadixNutrition.co.nz. Radix spelled R-A-D-I-X. All right, let's get into it. Nigel Beach on the Dom Harvey Podcast.
It's good to be here, mate. I've been seeing your work and, yeah, really appreciate the platform you're creating for so many cool people. And now you get me, which is less cool, but for your listeners, I'm sure. But I'm stoked to be here, mate.
We're not dealing with any of that self-deprecation stuff here.
Yeah, cool.
First of all, who are you and what do you do? Like, elevator pitch.
Yeah, so I'm a physiotherapist by trade, but I use that as currency more so, Dom, because a lot of techniques I have gathered from different areas of my life and my experiences. And effectively, what do? Well, I help people who are struggling. I help people who are in pain. I help people get their response to their situations under their control. So how do we control your situational response to an environment, which essentially is how do we help people execute their skill set under pressure?
Yeah.
And then I also help train someone's physiological response to exercise, which I don't think is really done well in the training space even now. And then the third way is I look at how people move. I assess to see, is this optimal or not? And try and identify causes for either pain that they're experiencing or how can we actually optimize their power output or their economy of movement and execution of their talents.
Right. So I was trying to wind the clock back yesterday and think about how I came into contact with you or how we know each other. And I can't actually pinpoint it exactly. I think a mutual friend of ours, Jay Reeve, maybe he talked about you on Instagram and I followed you from there. But last year I was dealing with a knee injury that was persistent and just wouldn't go away. And you messaged me out of the blue. This was very kind of you as well. And you said you gave me a list of like exercises to film myself doing, like walking forwards and walking backwards and a bunch of kooky stuff. So I sent you a bunch of video files, and then you sent them back like within a few hours, commentating what I was doing with lines on the videos, and it was really nice of you. It was like a free consult.
Cool, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I really, I do care for people really at the heart of it. And I think a lot of physiotherapists get into this kind of job for that, because they do genuinely care. And I could see your struggles with your knee, and I know how much it means to you to run. So, yeah, I just felt I've got to try and help this guy. Sometimes I try and help too many people, and yeah, so that's why I did that, mate. And
it's really nice of you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
I mean, there's been no miracle cure, but I am back running again, and I'd say maybe like 75-80%.
Yeah,
back to where it should be. So I'm hoping with continued work on trying to strengthen the muscles and the tendons around the knee, it'll get back to 100 at some point. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But and then towards the end of last year, I came and stayed with you for a couple of days for like a boot camp. And we got to bond a bit further then, and that was a invaluable experience. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that was great, and that was with some great people too. And
oh my god,
yeah,
yeah. So that was with Sarah Hiddeny, who's an Olympic gold medalist in the sevens, and she's also won the Rugby World Cup. And Jack Goodhue, All Black and six-time Super Rugby winner with the Crusaders. And so I'm from a media background, and in my sort of circles, I'm considered a bit of an exercise savage. Because, yeah, the bar is very low in media. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're like, whoa, Dom runs 30 Ks on a Friday. What a machine. And then suddenly I'm at your place hanging out with these high-performance people, and I'm just a piece of shit. Yeah, I was so out of my depth. It was a fascinating eye-opening experience for a couple of days, just seeing the level these sort of people operate on.
Yeah, and I really, when I do my performance intensives, which range from 2 days to 5 days, down in Mount Maunganui where I live, I try and bring together people from different backgrounds, because you can learn so much from different, you know, experiences that people have had. So it's good to bring someone who's out of the sporting arena in, and we all learn from each other's stories and experiences.
How did you blow up initially? When did that? Is there an exact moment that you can pinpoint, sort of like a tipping point for Nigel Beach?
Not really. See, I had a decade in London, so I was working over there for a long time. I came back and then, I looked to start something here in Auckland, but I soon worked out, actually, I'd rather be in Mount Maunganui. So we moved down there and set up shop down there, just started a clinic there from nothing. And I just pitched up to one of the lowest ranked football teams in the town, said, hey, would you like a physio? And they're like, whoa, what? You know, your resume is, you know, you've done all these things with different teams. It's too good for us. And I said, no, we're just about, you know, helping people out. And then, so that's where I started my clinic from. And that's really what generated my clinic. And then, I think just word of mouth, it just progressively grew. And then, I just think I only started Instagram a couple of years ago, and I'm 46, so I wasn't in that sort of mode, you know.
Mate, we're both boomers.
Yeah, so it didn't come easy. I was still sending faxes to people. So I think it was just progressive, and then I just started working with really cool people who had large followings, and then they gave testimony, like Art Green, for example, and Logan Dodds, Danny Robinson, and then their followers were attracted to some of this work that I was doing, because there really wasn't anyone in that space for them to learn from, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're doing great things, and so many people speak so highly of you. I, by chance, listened to a podcast the other day that Bowden Barrett was on, and he was singing your praises.
Oh, was he? Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. Okay.
So there's you're highly respected with a lot of these high-performance athletes. They swear by you. And I wonder if, like from the team perspective, a lot of team like management or the hierarchy think you're a bit kooky.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they? Like a sort of alternative, a little bit weird, a little bit out there.
Yeah, but it's kind of good because they've already got team physios.
Yeah.
So I pose no threat to them because I really don't want their job. I don't want to be the All Blacks team physio because I don't want to be away from my family. Like, I'm not actually the best at being that kind of physio. So there's no real threat to them. So, for example, I'm up here at the moment. you know, with the All Blacks, and Pete is the physio there. He's been there for 18 years. We have a great relationship. We totally respect each other's work. So he is very welcoming and enabling of my work. So that's really good. I think, yes, some coaches who haven't been exposed to this kind of work before, they can find it a little bit difficult to understand. Mm. And the problem is they actually need to do it themselves to feel it, to understand it. So I think really a lot of the work needs to be done on the coaches and management staff first to, if you really want to get a great team connection. What I tend to do now, I do work with some teams, but more so it's the individuals within those teams,
right,
which are seeking out that top 2%. They're really my clients nowadays. Mm.
Well, yeah, that's what we were talking about before when we met December last year for a 2-day retreat at your house with Sarah Hiddeney and Jack Goodhue. So Sarah was at the end of an epic year. She was on a break. Jack Goodhue, in between All Black seasons and Super Rugby season, he was on a break as well, and they just came to you because they wanted to be there.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the ones. Like, you look at Cody Taylor, you know, I've known Cody for 4 years now. We've probably worked together for probably 2.5 to 3 years, a little bit off and on in times. But they had a bye week for the Crusaders. Everyone goes away and plays golf, or they go on holiday. Cody brought his whole family up to the mountain. We had a 5-day intensive up at the mountain, intertwined with his family, you know, comings and goings. So those are the people. Like, and you look at Cody's year, he's been phenomenal. It doesn't happen by accident, because talent and skill will only get you so far.
Yeah.
And when you go through some adversity, that's when all of that starts to crumble. So I really admire Cody. He's a great friend. And those guys that are taking on the work, they're the ones that have probably been at it a little bit longer. And they might have gone through some adversity, whether that be selection or whether that be injury. Yeah, and they sort of know a little bit about what it's like to lose that peak performance or being at the top, and then they want it back.
Yeah. So, well, this is one thing that I found quite compelling with you. Last year, like, I went through numerous physiotherapists, and they were all well-meaning, and their advice came from a professional and educated place, but a lot of them said to me, if it hurts when you run and it doesn't generally hurt otherwise, just don't run.
Yeah.
And I tried to articulate to them that, yeah, running's quite an important part of my life, and yeah, it's like a cornerstone for my mental health. And you never discussed that. You were never like shrugging your shoulders saying, well, yeah, maybe just don't run.
Yeah, exactly.
And I really, really appreciated and respected that.
Cool. Thanks, mate. And yeah. I think, you know, we do get limits put upon us by people in authority or power in the medical sense, whether that be from surgeons telling us what we can and can't do. For example, I was told I could never run again. I was told we could never have children. So all of these things that get put upon us by higher powers, and I think really it's a lack of, to me, mate, I know they're all well-meaning, but I think to me that's a little bit lazy. It's like, well, why not? Do we tell Cody Taylor he shouldn't really play rugby because he might get a head knock? Or, you know, no, you want to try and optimize why they are not doing something at their best, and how can we get them back there? It's like with CrossFit. You remember the CrossFit craze?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, massive.
So many physios hated CrossFit. I was like, don't do it. But there is a massive, like, there's so many reasons we do exercise. And so I actually took a room at a CrossFit gym, and I planted one of my physios over there to help them still continue to train, because I saw the community CrossFit was building. I saw the effects on people's mental health and the connection that it gave people. So, yeah, we've got to try and look beyond, you know, oh, don't do this if this happens, rather than how can we actually make that work?
Mm.
So from what I look at, okay, why is a site in pain? Why is a site in pain? And it's typically not because of a dysfunction at that site. It's normally improper loading somewhere else, which is directing too much load into that site of pain. So that's what I try and work out.
Mm. Okay, so let's go right back. Why physiotherapy? So you're a kid from Thames.
Yeah, that's right.
Just mum and dad and one brother?
Yeah, one brother, Chris.
Yeah.
And very fortunate to have, he's just down the road in Papamoa, and my mum and dad are in Mount Maunganui too. So the whole family.
The beaches love the beach.
They do love the beach.
Yeah, so why physiotherapy? So you're in your teenage years at school.
Mate, I wanted to be a physio since I was 11 years old.
That is so random. Yeah, and did you go to a physio at 10 or 11?
Yeah, I did. I was in all the rep teams for hockey, so I did have my time on the physio table there, and I was just fascinated with the whole thing, you know, healing. And I was always the guy making the first aid kits, you know, when we go away on holiday, always prepared, you know. And
Well, family holidays.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, as a kid.
Yeah, man.
What do you mean?
You know those Griffin sampler tins?
Yeah.
I'd always like pack, like, you know, probably nothing useful, but Band-Aids or a needle or to get out a splinter or things like that.
Why didn't you become like a nurse or a paramedic?
Yeah, maybe I should have done that. But I think it was the physio side of it which I was drawn to because of my own experiences with physio. So I went... You know, and from the age of 11, and that's all I ever wanted to be, mate. All of my, you know, essays and assignments that had my own free choice through either intermediate or high school was done on what is physiotherapy or homeopathy. I remember I did an assignment on, and then not only that, I went and spent time with physios in practice, and not just in private practice, but in orthopedics at hospital or with. Post-op in hospital, so maybe different facets of physio just to try and learn it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you study physio. What's involved there? How many years?
It's 4 years.
4 years, right.
4 year degree. And then I came out of that degree and then I thought, well, I don't know anything. So then, much to my, you know, my parents' eyebrows being raised because they funded me through these next courses, I went and did all the courses I could do on physiotherapy, and then I went and did a postgrad in sports physiotherapy, so that took another 2 years. So I got, yeah, and I just, that thirst for knowledge has continued. I've spent so much money on courses and learning, and now I'm 24 years in, and yeah, I still keep that. I still maintain a constant thirst for knowledge and learning. So came out of the postgrad, I had some great mentors here. I missed out on the New Zealand Sevens job as their physiotherapist, so I thought, right, I'll go overseas, the old big OE. And
who was that? Was that when Gordon Titchens was still the coach of the Sevens?
Yeah, right. He was the coach.
What year was this? What are we talking?
That would have been
like early 2000s.
Yeah, maybe that might have been 2001, right, maybe.
Right. Wow, that would have been a hell of a team.
Yeah,
Christian Cullen, Jonah Lomu.
Well, yeah, all the superstars.
Yeah,
it was really good. It was a really interesting experience to interview. I think it was, who was there? Was Doc Mayhew there? Kevin McCoyd was a physio at the time, and Gordon Titchens. Yeah,
Gordon Titchens, very effective coaching style, but I feel like in under the 2023 lens, he'd probably be called a bully, or I don't know. Yeah. I don't think his coaching style would translate well now, but so effective.
Yeah, well, he really. Well, I think he was really one of the first coaches. I've never experienced his coaching or seen into it, but just from talking to some of the players who played under him, he was big around fitness, wasn't he?
Massive, yeah. Massive. Famous for getting these guys that were superstars of the game, like vomiting or almost crying on the first day of his, you know, pre-season boot camp or whatever.
Yeah.
Just drilled them so hard. But they were the along with Fiji, like the best team around at the time.
Yeah, they were. And they also had that ability to... when they were down in the last 2 minutes, which is what fitness really does, doesn't it? It gives you the opportunity to come from behind and be good in the last 2 minutes when the other guys are flagging.
Yeah. Okay, so you're quite young in your career at that point, so you miss out on that job. Then what?
Then
throw your toys and go overseas.
No, I didn't really. they gave very good praise and you know, complimented me on the interview, and it was a good friend of mine that actually got the role. So I don't really think I wasn't upset about that. I just thought, right, what next?
By the way, I was kidding about that. I've spent quite a bit of time with you, and I've never seen you raise your voice. You're at your house, and, you know, your kids are being tyrants. You never raise your voice. Yeah. You're always a very, very measured and calm guy.
Mm, thanks, mate. I think that comes from my upbringing.
Yeah.
I never saw my parents scrap at all. Never heard my dad raise his voice.
Wow.
Yeah, so I really do value my upbringing to a lot of my success, if you call it that, or perseverance and discipline, dedication to my work, and also love for people, really, based on my parents. So then I thought, right, I'll go overseas. I'll go and do my OE. I had a large friend group. up here, and they were all going overseas, travelling. So my best friend, he was keen to go as well, so we went together and did the typical Southeast Asia, over to Turkey for Anzac Day, and then, up into London, and then onwards from there. And it was sort of in the boom time there. The economy was good. I had really good qualifications. If you had a post-grad qualification in London, you did really well. You could step into any job you wanted. So then I would sort of work for 4 to 6 months and then travel for 4 to 6 months too. So it was a great way to see the world.
How did you meet your wife?
Yeah, so we met in London.
Yeah.
Jess is a radiographer. She's an absolute cracker. And, we met there. She was coming back to... I think she was going to Australia. She was born in Australia. And then she decided to stay, convinced her to stay for a couple of months. We got to know each other more. And then I thought, yeah, I'm ready to come home now too. So, so we met over there.
Yeah, I bring her up because I think she's worthy of a mention because you have all sorts of people traipsing through your house every day of the week. And she's so hospitable and so nice, and your kids are so great with everybody as well. Yeah. So you mentioned before something about fertility issues.
Yeah.
What was that? Was that on your side or her side?
That was on her side, right, in the sense of she really struggled with endometriosis for a long time, since about 16 years old. And she had 5 surgeries to try and remove this endometriosis, which is basically these endometrial cells should grow inside the uterus, and those cells are responsible for releasing blood in the menstrual cycle. In endometriosis, those cells grow outside of the uterus. So it can be very painful, very disabling. It can cause adhesions, all sorts of issues. It's a terrible problem that we really need to try and tackle better than what we are now. I remember she had her 5th surgery, and they opened her up and just closed her up. And just, I remember when the surgeon came into the room and just said, "I'm really sorry, honey, but you cannot have children." And for a guy that's gotten everything he's ever wanted in life through perseverance, discipline, and, you know, all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, wow, that was the first thing that was taken totally out of my control, mate. And then, of course, you ask, well, what can we do? And anyone who's got endometriosis would be able to, you know, be sympathetic to hearing that you can't do anything. Or maybe go on a vegan diet. Or maybe, you know, these kind of, there's nothing really that you can do about it. We weren't even really told what it was. So if you don't know what it is, how can you overcome it? You don't really know the physiology of it. But hey, there's a great story at the end of it. We've got our beautiful family now. And,
yeah, 2 kids.
Yeah, so I think language is really important, and I think optimism is perhaps lacking in some medical spaces. I think you've got to give people confidence.
Yeah, and I mean, completely different, but like we were talking before with my knee, I think some of the physios I went to see sort of underestimated my will and desire to be running again.
Yeah.
But the fertility thing, that's something that I'm, it's quite close to my heart, because myself and my former wife, JJ, like I had a tumour in my abdomen area that was taken out, and it left me with a condition called retrograde ejaculate, which means everything works the same, but when you have an orgasm, nothing comes out. But the surgeon that took the tumour out, in like quite a lengthy, and I suppose in a way, potentially a life-saving operation, he knew nothing about fertility, and he saw me when I was recovering in hospital, like a couple of days after the operation, and he said to me, "Oh, hey, you may have this condition now. It's fairly common, retrograde ejaculate, but don't worry. The fertility situation is real easy now. They just harvest the sperm and blah blah, you know." And he made it sound really simple, and I thought at the time, "Okay, sweet as." And all I knew about IVF and fertility at that point was what you read in Woman's Day, like, you know, Cher had a baby at the age of 70, or you know, Nicole Kidman's having quadruplets or whatever. Yeah. And you do think it's really easy, and turns out the surgeon, he was a fantastic surgeon, but he knew nothing about fertility treatment. So anyway, long story short, we went through years and years of fertility and didn't have kids at the end. But speaking to you now, like, I wonder if there was I wonder if there was anything else that could have been done to like rectify or change my situation. Maybe not.
It's really tough, isn't it? And you know, winding back and seeing it, and I think, but what we can do from there is maybe look forward and say, what are some of the things that do affect the ability to conceive. And that's a lot of my work, is looking at the autonomic nervous system, which is that stress state and the calm state. And really, to have your body in an optimal state for all sorts of health, not only just fertility, is to have a balanced system, not be in that stress state too much. Because our body isn't really made to conceive if we're in this burnt out, stressed out situation, because it's not going to be doing harm, not going to be doing benefit for a baby to be brought up in that environment. Because what if there's a famine going on, or war, or something like that? So I think, the more we can educate ourselves on the role of the autonomic nervous system in health, plus also stopping this cleaving at the joints. Every sort of injury or disease state, and looking at us from a holistic one being, you know, which means instead of saying, you know, okay, here's depression, okay, you need to see this guy for that. Okay, here's your back pain, you need to see this guy for that. And then the depression guy won't talk about the back pain because that's not his domain. And then, oh, the doctor's going to prescribe something, but he's not responsible for that. I think we really need to stop siloing off all these different things, like fertility, the psychology around depression or anxiety that may come from chronic pain. And we need to start bringing things more together and educating people, like instead of saying that's not my role, educating people on some of that whole person approach to back pain, fertility, whatever it be. I think that's really the key, mate. Mm.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How's your mental health been? Has it always been good?
Yeah, it has, mate.
Have you had to work on it, or have you been one of the lucky ones? Or
really fortunate, mate, in that I found a lot of these modalities before I got married, before I had kids, before I had a mortgage, before I had a business. All of the things which may pique people off to have a less than optimal mental health, I was already doing things to steal my, or make more resilient, my mental health or mental fitness. So if you think of mental fitness like physical fitness, so I was just very fortunate in my pursuit of helping my population of clients that these techniques also help to improve your mental fitness. So, mate, I've been really good. I'm really fortunate to say that.
What has been the lowest point in your life, you reckon?
I think back pain. I struggled with back pain. Yeah, for a very long time. And I think that out of that adversity has given me these tools to look at things differently. Because I had back pain for 12 years, really debilitating back pain. And I remember when my parents came over to see me in London, and we went to have dinner, and they were up at the table, and I was kneeling down on the floor. And Mum just started crying, and it, you know, still creases me up a little bit now. Because I couldn't sit because of my back. And I just thought that was normal. I'm like, yeah, but I've got 3 prolapse discs in my back. There is a ceiling on what I can do. I just normalized that, because that's what I was told by the 14 different physios that I saw.
Oh, you went 14?
Mate, yeah.
My girlfriend, she said to me, Dom, you can't keep replacing physios until you find the answer you want. But it turns out you can.
You can, mate. And I really encourage you for people out there, keep searching. Because so many people come to me, or when you go to a barbecue, which, you know, you always get tapped for info when you're at a barbecue. And then they say, oh, I tried physio, you know. So depending on how much respect I have for that person will depend on my answer. It might be like, oh, okay, cool, man. Or it might be like, hey, do you know that not all physios are the same? And not all physios are the same on the one day as the next day. So physios really get a window of maybe 20 to 30 minutes to see someone.
Yeah.
They can't unravel all the stuff. So maybe you need to give that physio another chance, a different lens to look through, maybe more time, or maybe you need to seek out another physio who will be totally different to the other one.
Yeah.
And you got to keep searching. That's certainly what I did and then found the answer eventually.
So how did you fix your back?
So I had spinal surgery when I was 30 over in London, which was a really... I was a physio, and I saw what happened when people had spinal surgery. Mm. So I was really freaked out about that. But that was, yeah, that was the lowest point in my life, the searing back pain. I couldn't defecate in the morning. You know, it was those things which were such a problem. I couldn't touch my kneecaps from a standing position.
Wow.
Mm, wild, mate. So much disability. You wouldn't believe it now, right? But so I saw Europe's top neurosurgeon, Peter Hamlin, and... he did a really good job on my back, but a year later I was still in pain. And I went back to him, and he was sort of frustrated and annoyed because surgeons don't really like to admit that they might not have got that problem sorted. So he sort of dismissed me, which is fine, that's okay. But it made me, now my good friend Jimmy Hunt will call this radical ownership, but it made me have a moment of radical ownership, realizing no one's going to fix this. It's up to me now. And that's when I looked outside the box of physiotherapy to basically come up with a program that alleviated my back pain.
Mm. Radical ownership. Yeah. I like that. I've never heard that phrase. Jimmy Hunt, by the way, for anyone that doesn't know, he's like a mental health advocate. Mm. He's written a book about, didn't he, like raft down the Waikato River?
He did. He liloed.
Liloed, yeah, and walked the length of the country as well.
He did, yeah. He's the world's largest water slide. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. So. Mm.
Worth Googling and doing some research on him.
Yeah, and he's got numerous books out, but he also just genuinely cares for people.
Yeah.
And you can hit him up and he will try and help you.
Yeah.
But that radical ownership, that comes from a position of, yes, things aren't fair in life, things aren't just. Whatever it took to get you into this state, it might be totally unfair, but it's how you come out of it, and that's 100% your responsibility.
Mm. Do you think with mental health there's some people that that with say clinical depression need to be medicated, or do you think that for most people there's an alternative way?
Yeah, I think depression is it's a really complex thing.
Yeah.
Depression is, but I do think there's mental health and mental illness. Mental health awareness is not really doing quite right.
Yeah.
And if anything, it might be making things worse because people are learning that there's mental health out there, and then they use that as an excuse or a crutch because they don't really understand the physiology of, say, anxiety. And when you understand that anxiety is actually a physiological state that occurs through various things, maybe a disordered breathing pattern, maybe a poor tolerance to carbon dioxide, maybe inflammation, and then there are actually some things you can do to alter that positively. So how about we have the discussion around mental health awareness of actually talking about what is anxiety?
Yeah.
What is depression? How about we talk about the fact that 30% of depression, 30 to 40% of depression, is caused by inflammation? Mm. So why don't we learn about how inflammation is potentially causing depression and how people with inflammation as their cause of depression, the medications won't actually work well for them. Not only that, Dom, but there's also the notion that if you are inflamed, your risk of depression becomes greater.
Yeah.
So why aren't we testing people for their inflammatory marker, which is a very difficult thing to get out of a doctor? I pay for my own. It costs $20.10 down in Tauranga. And why aren't we testing these things routinely? And then we can say, well, your inflammation marker is up a little bit. There's a potential risk factor here for depression.
Yeah.
Do we understand what that is, and should we go through some things which might be able to mitigate that from happening?
Mm.
So they are the conversations I'd rather see in Mental Health Awareness Week, or just in mental health programming, really the understanding of what mental fitness is. Because what I'm seeing is people coming to me asking for a note to get them out of PE because of their anxiety, you know. But it's sort of been... you know, it's in our culture now. We get the Kardashians on the television there, and you get Courtney come out and say to Chloe, "Oh my God, those shoes are giving me anxiety." So we're using the words wrong. Those shoes are not giving her anxiety. She is upset at the colour choice of Chloe's shoes or whatever it be. But that is not anxiety.
Yeah, it's a flippant remark, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally.
Yeah.
And we're using that now. And people are hanging on to my anxiety, you know? What is that? Is it a living thing within you? No, it's just your response or reaction to a situation, which is over and above what it needs to be.
Yeah. Speaking of anxiety, though, I did have real anxiety when I was at your place and I was about to go on the ice bath. So at the back of Nigel's house, you've got a sauna, which is a great social space, by the way, and you share a lot on your social media. Has anyone complained or said, oh, no, can you not, please, no photos? Everyone seems really good. Like you have so many high performance and high function. Yeah. Joel Shadbolt, good friend of yours from the band LAB, one of the best vocalists in the country. He's on your Instagram all the time in the sauna. Yeah. All Blacks, rugby league players.
Yeah,
you name it, they're there. No, everyone's okay with being.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
yeah, they.
I mean, I was happy when I was there because I was flanked between an All Black and one of the greatest female rugby players.
Yeah, that's right. And the conversations are so good.
Yeah.
And honestly, what's happened on that sauna bench has really launched some careers. So, Josiah Natsky, who we had a great performance group there. We did, I think it was 4 days. We had Marcus Armstrong, who's an IndyCar racer now. Josiah Natsky, who races for Kawasaki over in North America, professional motocross rider. We had Nick Mowbray from Zuru.
Oh, yep. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Jay Reeve was there. Anton Leonard Brown. So, man, what a pool of experience and advice. And it was in the sauna that Josiah, you know, Anton Leonard Brown and Sarah Hiddeney, they asked him, where's he going with his career? And Josiah said, oh, yeah, I really want to race at America. And Anton, he was pretty tough. He said, well, you're not in America. You need to be in America if you want to race in America. So he really challenged his process of Josiah was just sort of cruising through with this notion in his head that was his goal. But he didn't have any steps to enable him to reach that goal.
Right.
So in that sauna, mate, that was the moment that triggered he bought flights to the States that week.
I love that so much about that space that you've created in your sauna. It's like an exchanging of ideas.
Yeah.
I had very little to bring when when I was in the sauna, but I was just like taking it all in and absorbing it. It was great. So when did you get into the whole hot-cold thing? Because this has become, I suppose, like a cornerstone of what you're about, but it's nothing necessarily to do with physiotherapy, is it?
No, not really. No. And but it kind of is. It's what it should be. Because I was seeing this population of clients who were struggling with chronic pain. I typically see people that have had pain for a long time. I don't see the rugby guys that have had a bump or a bruise on the weekend or the sprained ankles going up the mound. I don't see that stuff. You're better off seeing someone down the road who can handle that. I tend to see people who are struggling that have failed common treatment approaches. And I knew that there was a role in their pain and their condition of the autonomic nervous system, which is made up of the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. So rest and digest, flight, fight and freeze, calm, stress. And I knew there was a role, but we didn't know that we could influence it. We thought it was unconsciously beyond our control. And that's what science said in the books. And then in 2013, Wim Hof did a study at the Rabond University in the Netherlands where he was injected with E. coli, an endotoxin, which should have triggered off this huge immune response. He defeated the E. coli within 15 minutes. So that then, to those researchers, they were like, wow, Wim, you've just attenuated the innate immune response. Thee that cannot be controlled, you've controlled it. You're amazing. And Wim being Wim said, I'm not amazing. You know, he could have been a David Blaine and done all these tricks around the world, slowing his heart rate.
Yeah. So for anyone, I don't want to patronise anyone that's listening, but just in case there's anyone that doesn't know about the Wim Hof story or who he is, how would you describe him in a couple of sentences? I know he's got a shit ton of world records.
Yep, 26 Guinness World Records. Wow. He is a remarkable man who has a technique called the Wim Hof Method, which utilizes breathing techniques and gradual, non-forced exposure to cold.
An awful, awful backstory, right, with his wife.
Yeah, and when you think about why did Wim get into this? Well, his wife committed suicide, and he was left with four children between the age of 5 and 11 to bring up. So his real mission, he wanted to end depression. So she had depression, and she committed suicide. And, you know, he had his own grief to go through as well. So that was his very noble cause for seeking out how to help the world. And he's just a massive, like, his spirit is phenomenal. If you could watch a documentary on him, I think, and if it was just one, I would say the Goop Lab.
No, I would agree with Gwyneth Paltrow.
You've seen that?
Yeah, yeah, it's a good bite-sized entry into the world of Wim Hof.
Yeah, and it comes from a bit more of a feminine angle rather than some of the, you know, people that are, he was on Joe Rogan's podcast. So then you got a lot of macho male men attracted to his techniques and methods, and they were sort of telling the story from the, But I think Gwyneth's show brings it down to more of that more feminine style, which I really like.
You're not just a student of his, though. You and him are sort of like mates, right?
Yeah.
He stays at your house and...
Yeah, so we're very good friends, good confidants. Massive respect.
How did that happen?
So that study was in 2013. So then I read that study, I was blown away, and I was like, this is going to help my population of clients. I have to seek this guy out and learn more from him. And he happened to be coming down to Australia to do a week-long live-in retreat. So I went over there to try and learn more about his methods. It was an amazing group of people. There were 30 of us there. This would never happen now. There'd be probably 500 people there, and you'd probably get an instructor of Wim's. But there were 30 people there, and we're still really tight to this day, that group of people. And there was no one there really going to learn about his method to deploy it in a clinical setting. It was more people, they had Lyme disease, major depressive disorder, all manners of, you know, there was pain. It was like, wow, this is amazing. But all of these people were sort of seeking out that top 2%. You know, these were real successful people in business, but they might have been suffering with burnout, or successful people in whatever they were trying to do in life. So amazing group of people. So I went and had a week with him, just connected. We became really good friends. I helped him articulate some of the science that I was seeing from what I thought was occurring during the Wim Hof method. Then he came and stayed, with the family. And my little boy's middle name is Wim. So,
wow.
Yeah, so there's a connection there, named after Wim. That wasn't my choice, that was my wife's.
You do a great impression of him. You, I don't know if you want to share this on the, maybe this is a private thing, but when I stayed with you, we walked up Mount Maunganui and you were bare feet, and you did an impression of Wim walking up Mount Maunganui chatting to strangers on the way.
Oh, yeah, because it was amazing. Because Wim was staying and we're going up the mount, and, you know, it was always a bit of a bugbear of mine when you go up the mount that people wouldn't say hello.
Mm.
And, you know, I like saying hello to people.
You're both out there doing the same thing at the same time, and it's kind of a cool connection. I agree. I'm like that with running.
It is.
I wave at everybody.
And Wim just wouldn't say hello, mate. He'd say, hey, man, hey, how you going? Good on you, man. Keep it going. We go on. You go. And it was these people were just getting bursts of enthusiasm from
this one weird, barefoot, Jesus-looking guy.
I didn't know who he was. it was great stuff.
You told me another story about most people had no idea who he was, or they didn't acknowledge him. And then there was some guy at the top that said, oh my God, you're Wim Hof, you changed my life, sort of thing. That's so cool.
And I've been with Wim so many times now. Jess and I went and saw him, had a week with him in Australia a couple of months ago. And he's so, so full of life, mate. But he practices what he preaches. He gets up in the morning and he does the stuff. But when you're out with him in public now, like especially in Australia, people come up to him and say, you saved my life. One guy jumped through a restaurant window. Wim and I were having dinner. He jumped in through the restaurant window and hugged him and said how he saved his life. So, and that just happens so often, mate.
Yeah. Amazing. And he travels only with like carry-on, right? Like,
yeah. He turned up at my house. I had to give him a pair of shoes. And he had just a backpack, which was half full. He had nothing in there. So, mate, he's the gypsy traveller, yeah.
I listened to an audiobook of his a few years ago, and there's a mantra in there, a cold shower a day keeps the doctor away. But you go next level. You've got like a custom-made ice bath, which, by the way, am I the most hilarious person you've... Be honest with me, the most hilarious, awkward, uncomfortable person you've seen in the ice?
You were definitely up there, Tom. Yes.
It was... I'm not good at putting on a poker face, but... So this... this time I spent at your house. So Jack Goodhue from the Crusaders, he'd get in and he was like chatting to me and chatting to you, chatting to people. It was like it was a warm bath. I got in there and I was like a face of concentration. You can see veins poking out of my neck. I wasn't hamming it up or anything. I was doing the best I could to be calm.
Yeah. But then when I see that in someone, that's when I know, hey, he's in the right place because this is what he needs. And day two, you were much, much better. You know, so
and I didn't not enjoy it either. I found it invigorating. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, that's the unconscious. That's our threshold for that stress system to come on is governed by our environment. So past experiences, current environment, and everyone's got a different threshold to that stress state. So by going into the ice, that triggered off your stress system.
Mm.
That was like flight and fight and freeze, you know, survival. So, you know, people like Jack and, you know, I jumped out of my first cold shower after 10 seconds. I thought, F this, no way, man. But, yeah.
Is that a good way for people to start? I'll have a shower in the morning and then for the last minute, I'll put it on cold and stand there. And the first couple of times you do it, you're hyperventilating. And then it gets easier and easier. And now, I wouldn't say I look forward to it, but it's a nice feeling when you get out.
Yeah. If you think about what's the low-hanging fruit, what is the non-negotiable? Cold shower at the end of your daily warm shower. Mm. Non-negotiable. Because for 30 seconds, there is no one who can come up with an excuse which could derail you from that constant practice. So that's what I do, personally. Every day, non-negotiable, a cold shower at the end of my warm. And if people just start with that, because then they're achieving something, and that is going to have a therapeutic benefit, and then there are, you're going to see a proliferation of spaces around Auckland coming up over the next few years with proper sauna, proper cold plunge, and then there will be a community aspect to this. Like, I'm sure that people in Finland would be like thinking, wow, there's a guy talking about sauna and cold plunging on a podcast. You know, it's just their culture, it's their life, it's what they do.
Do you think it's like a phase at the moment, or it's going to be here to stay?
Yeah, I think it's fashionable now because of the understanding around how it works.
Okay.
And the big thing with sauna, there was a 20-year observational study, which is huge, observing people over 20 years and to see what the effects are of saunering in Finland, done by a cardiologist called Dr. Jari Laukkanen in Finland, observing 2,340 men over a space of 20 years to see how it influences their health. And that study was amazing because it came out that if you sauna'd 4+ times a week, your risk of death from any cause went down 40%. Your risk of cardiovascular related death went down 50%. And I think it's those kinds of numbers that have gotten people to say, hey, I want some of that now.
Mm.
So instead of us not really knowing what sauna was, thinking it was some kind of Scandinavian or Russian kind of practice that they would do, but not knowing the reason behind it. And I've spoken to many Scandinavians, an Estonian sauna master, who we had a great chat in a sauna. He knew nothing about the health benefits of sauna. He just knew it made him feel great. But he knew a lot about the cultural aspect of sauna, which we had a great chat about. But I think that's why you're seeing this uptick. People like Dr. Rhonda Patrick that are coming out explaining the benefits of sauna. People like Andrew Huberman coming out explaining the benefits of sauna.
Yeah, Lex Fridman, Joe Rogan,
yeah.
All that circuit, they're all massive on it. Does it matter if it's infrared?
Yeah, so you will get some benefit from infrared, but you get a lot more benefit from traditional, authentic Finnish sauna. And in fact, in Europe, in countries, it is illegal to use infrared sauna as two words.
Oh, okay.
You have to say infrared cabin.
Okay.
Because it just doesn't have the same benefits.
Right.
You know, it's better than nothing, maybe, but I really think if people can, I really push for people to get an authentic Finnish sauna or an authentic Scandinavian sauna in their home. And that is what defines that. Well, that means a sauna that can go between 80 and 100 degrees Celsius, which is bloody hot. And also you need to have the ability to put water onto rocks, which will create what in the Finnish term is lulu, which I'm probably pronouncing terrible there. But lulu, which is essentially means the spirit of life or the essence of life, that really does bring about a new sensation into the sauna. Remember when I put the water on the rocks and it's like, whoa, this wave of heat, and you try and bury down as low as you can go to try and get away from that.
me specifically.
Yeah, only you, Dom, ever. So.
Yeah, I know. Well, since I saw you, I've been doing the cold shower thing, which I know is not as good as a nice bath, but it's still invigorating and makes you feel good. And I've been going to, there's some baths not far from where I live called the Tepid Baths, and I've been going there, but this one is like 70 degrees.
Yeah.
So I do 30 or 40 minutes in there, and I know, I remember you saying something about how it should be stressing your body, but I actually enjoy it. Starts to get maybe a little unpleasant towards the end, but it's mostly enjoyable. Does that mean I'm not getting the benefit?
Potentially. If you're at 70, you need to have a high amount of water on the rocks. So I was in London end of last year, and I went to two amazing saunas over there. They were more Russian style. So they run their saunas at about 70 degrees, but they use a lot of humidity, a lot of water on the rocks, and boy, that was tough.
Mm.
So I think 70 degrees in a dry sauna probably won't be enough. So when I say won't be enough, you'd probably have to spend a lot longer in there to reach that state of discomfort. But really, with sauna, it should be uncomfortable in the last minute or two. And with ice, it's always uncomfortable in the first minute, and then you start to get a little bit used to it.
Yeah, I was eyeing up this one called an Oslo, which is like a one-person infrared cabin, I guess.
Yes.
Maybe I'll put that on hold for now.
Save your money if you can. And I really... Yeah, I get a lot of this on my Instagram. People always ask me what's the difference. And there are benefits from infrared sauna, but it's a different style of heating. It's heating you from within. So it's infrared waves which enter in your body. So it's not really heating up the room. Whereas authentic sauna heats up the room to 80 to 100 degrees. And the modality is a lot different. And then you think about, well, why do we sauna? And, you know, why are we seeing all these amazing results in the studies looking at longevity, but also depression, heat as a modality to help treat major depressive disorder? There's some great research on that. So really, we're activating what's called our heat shock proteins. These are proteins that directly come out as a response to heat, and they seek out the damaged proteins in our body, which when proteins damage, we're all made up of proteins. When they are damaged, they fold over and then they aggregate, they stick together, and that can cause all sorts of problems medically. So these heat shock proteins come out and literally unfold those damaged proteins. So that's how we get repair and rejuvenation. But there's numerous other benefits to that authentic sauna. It stiffens the arteries, which is actually a good thing. It helps our blood pressure. It mimics moderate cardiovascular exercise. It's really like a workout. So there's a lot of benefits to traditional sauna.
You've used so many big words in this podcast. I generally assume any room I go to, I assume I'm probably the dumbest person in the room. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that understand everything you're talking about, but maybe there's some people like me that don't. But it's the bits in between that I do understand. It's bloody great stuff.
Cool, mate.
God, you're doing great work. So the week we're recording this, the All Blacks are in Auckland and they're about to go to Melbourne for a game against Australia.
Yeah.
Who reaches out to you? You're not here in an official role with the All Blacks?
Yeah, no,
it's
not.
It's like an individual sort of personal trainer sort of vibe.
Yeah, but with their blessing, I guess. So
yeah.
I was with the All Blacks in 2019. I was asked to come in and give my thoughts on performance. I was with the Wallabies at that stage and... So implemented a program in that World Cup campaign that they use for the year. So in that time, I got to meet a number of the All Blacks, and I continued to work with... They saw some of my work, and when you're in an All Blacks environment, there's just no time. So, but they knew that there was some more to my work, and so I started working with members of the team on a one-on-one capacity over time. And then, the All Blacks had a camp down in Mount Maunganui. One of the players reached out to me for some help around a situation. And then seeing I knew the All Blacks set up, he went back, spoke to them, and they said, yeah, let's bring Nigel into these camps to help.
How did you team up with Joel Shadbolt from LAB? How did that relationship come about?
Yeah, so he came to me and he was just, you know, he was having some issues. Before a performance.
Mm.
So I helped him with that.
Nerves, stage fright.
Yeah, which is totally logical. When you go out in front of, 30,000 people, and you have to execute a skill set and give to that crowd and lift them up and do all of those things. It's logical that your body will start to corrupt your skill set and start to put you into this state of maybe panic or agitation. So I started working with Joel back then. And yeah, we just continue on because it's been a really good relationship, and there's still some techniques and modalities that Joel uses, you know, before a performance or on tour, especially because that's really rigorous. But he's noticed massive changes, and yeah, he's great. So he comes for the catch ups. We were working together for 3 years, saunering, doing all the stuff before we actually had a drink. So that was he loved it because it was like every time people want to catch up with him, it's always around alcohol. And it was only about 6 weeks ago. He's like, mate, do you want a whiskey on the deck? And we did. And he's like, this is the first time we've actually had alcohol. So I think sauna is great because you don't need to have something in your hand.
Actually, I was going to say, just when you were midway through that sentence, that environment of being in your sauna with a bunch of other people, it is kind of like sitting around in the evening having a drink with people on the deck.
Yes,
like the sort of conversations that go on. I don't know, it just feels like a safe space or something.
Totally. It is really good for that. Yeah. Totally good for that. So that's why I recommend when people get saunas, get bigger than what you think you'll need because then you can invite people around. And
it's quite a social thing. Totally. Clearly the answer's no, but I wonder if you, like your wife's bothered about this. Like your house is like a halfway house.
Yeah.
Granted, it's a very, very upmarket halfway house. It's like a who's who of New Zealand sports and entertainment, but there's people traipsing through all the time. She's getting towels out for people like me that forget to bring their own.
Yeah.
She all good with it?
Yeah, she is. She's very welcoming, and she's amazing, mate. She totally is. So very welcoming of the people, and she knows the mission. Yeah, so she loves it. Yeah. She's very shy. Like she will like be like, oh, I won't go in when you're in there, or you know, but then I'm like, no, come on in. But it's great. She doesn't know half them because she's not really in that space. It's quite funny. She asked one of the All Blacks, what do you do? And he played rugby. Oh, who do you play for? You
know? It's quite endearing. Eh?
Yeah, exactly.
That's quite good. And so you've got two kids. Marnie's your daughter.
Yep,
how old is she?
She's eight.
Eight. Yeah. And
Henley.
Henley, that's right. Yeah, so when we were there last year, your daughter Marnie, she kept on writing me up like citation tickets for swearing.
Yeah, mate.
Jack Good, she's clearly got a type, and it's gonna be big rugby players because Jack Goodhue, he didn't get any citations.
Yeah, well,
he got a free pass on a lot of things.
I don't know if he transgressed as much as you, Dom.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, well, yeah, she used to, you know, if you said the word bloody, she'd get her book out. Yeah.
Write you a little note. That's awesome. Should we end with a couple of sort of, I was going to say quick fire, but they don't actually have to be quick fire, but just some questions that I think can provide some information that can help anyone that's listening to this.
Yeah, that would be good.
First of all, one thing I've noticed, and some people, I suppose, depending on the quality of the headphones they're listening with, would have noticed, you're a nasal breather. Like quite often you'll stop at the end of a sentence and inhale through the nose and speak again. This is an intentional thing. This is the correct way of breathing?
Yes, exactly. We should be breathing through our nose for pretty much 100% of the time for most people, because nasal breathing is so important for optimal health. The nose serves 26 different functions. It warms the air, humidifies the air. You've got turbinates in the nasal cavity, which spiral the air into the lungs at the right speed. You've got mucus, which traps pathogens and all sorts of stuff. Motorway dust out here in Auckland, Dom. But and you've got the cilia, which is here, which traps pathogens and filters as well. You got nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator, which opens up the airways. So it's all about getting more oxygen into our body. How do we feel good? Well, if our body is properly oxygenated. When you're breathing through your nose, all of that starts to happen. When you breathe through your mouth, you're blowing off carbon dioxide far too much. You're not utilizing the nitric oxide, which is not only a vasodilator, meaning more oxygen into the blood, but it's also a sterilizing agent, so another protective mechanism. If you breathe through your mouth, you can actually alter your jaw shape. So it's really important for kids to be nasal breathers. What takes us away from nasal breathing is things like growing up in an anxious environment, experiencing some form of trauma perhaps. And that doesn't have to be like an emotional abuse or anything like that. It could merely be growing up in a moldy, damp home. And that will dictate kids to fall into a mouth breathing trap. Post-COVID, I'm seeing a lot of people with long COVID problems, and they flick into a mouth breathing pattern. What else? It changes teeth growth, so you can get occlusion of the teeth. You get a malformed jaw formation, so it becomes a lot shorter and sunken rather than elongated. What else happens? So it really, yeah, makes sense to try and be a nasal breather at all times. And this is a real low-hanging fruit, not only for just day-to-day, but for exercise as well.
And did I... Am I imagining this, or did I hear you say somewhere that people should sleep with tape over their mouth?
Yeah, some people should. And there was a thing in one of the media outlets, you know, just trying to debunk that until you read down the bottom. They had like a little conflict of interest report there saying, actually, this guy owns a sleep clinic, and of course he's advocating for everyone to go to a sleep clinic. Mm. But on the whole, let's empower people. Let's not say, oh, you've actually got to, you know, give them something and try it. Is it going to work, yes or no? You're not going to die from taping your mouth.
Mm. And how do we tape it? Because the last thing I want is anyone to go. Is it like a little strip covering the lips?
Yeah,
or?
All it is. And, of course, you use some logic. If you're full with a cold, if you can't breathe very well through your nose to start with, yeah, you wouldn't maybe tape it. But if you do die, hey, come back and see us, and then we'll give you a refund. Or
haunt Nigel.
Yeah.
Haunt Nigel.
But yeah, mouth taping is simply a strip of... You can use multiple tapes. I've actually got some specific mouth tape with me now for one of the guys. But you can get something called myotape, or you can just get some 3M Micropore, and it's literally a vertical strip.
Yeah.
So your lips aren't even completely occluded. And I think if... People just try, even if they don't tape through the night, they might just tape their mouth for the hour before bed and see, does this bring about some change? Because if you tape your mouth at night and if it's going to work for you, you'll wake up feeling massively more refreshed.
Yeah.
That's how you know if it's working.
Mm. Is there breathing routines or techniques that anyone can do while, you know, driving or walking or whatever that can improve their mood? I know Wim Hof, like before the ice water stuff, it's generally rooted in sort of a breathing technique, isn't it?
Yeah, but with Wim's breathing, definitely keep that away from water, because Wim's breathing technique is very strong and powerful. It's a controlled hyperventilation technique. I actually don't teach that in my clinic. So there's other forms of breathing you can do which can bring about a better change within you, I think, for the general population, and that is to shut their mouth and breathe through their nose. That's a key.
Okay.
And then on my Instagram, I've actually done a video of my 5-minute anti-agitation breathing, and I get so many comments about that. And that's just the tile where it's my head holding up four fingers. And if you look at that one and go through that for 5 minutes, I think that would be my advice on a powerful technique that you can do to bring about change when you're in an anxious moment. It brings about a real sense of calm.
How far down on your Instagram is that?
Or, yeah, it's a little bit.
You need to learn how to pin posts.
Yeah, I should pin that.
Yeah, and you should pin that at the top.
I'll pin it for 2 months or something, and then people, you know, the listeners can check it out.
That's good. I've heard you say in a podcast that the gut is the second brain. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, I think... I don't want to get too in the weeds on that because there are some other things that we can do which can influence the gut. For example, the vagus nerve goes all the way from the neck down into the gut. The vagus nerve is directly related to your autonomic nervous system. So if you can bring about some equilibrium into that stress and calm state, your gut is going to get better. What I see in people is people that come in with, say, anxiety or chronic pain, you will often find they'll have either diarrhea or constipation. So that's a neurally driven, autonomically driven problem. So sometimes people can be labeled with, say, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or different things. But really, I think we've got to come at it from the heart of it, which is a disequilibrium in the autonomic nervous system. So I think that's really where it comes in.
Yeah. What's your relationship with Mike Hosking and Kate Hawksby? He talks about you quite a lot.
Yeah.
Have you had sessions with him?
I haven't, mate. No.
So are you guys not bros? I thought you were like bros.
No. And
Have you met?
We haven't, mate. No, he had me on his show.
And he talks about you a lot in other interviews as well. And I've heard him talk about how you love a French red wine. And I thought, oh, these guys must have been on the deck together.
Yeah.
No.
No, we haven't, mate. I'd love to meet him.
He really sings your praises.
Yeah, it's really good. I really do appreciate it because he's got such a massive platform. And
huge.
Yeah, and Kate does as well. And, yeah, I really appreciate those two. It's amazing that you can be on like a top rating, essentially a news program, and he's talking about things to optimize the health. Mm. So I really do like that.
Well, yeah, one thing about that, so I believe they've got a sauna at home. Yep. I've heard him say he has 3 cold showers a day.
Yep.
Is that too much? Is that one too many?
I think one might be, one's probably linked into the sauna. So when you do sauna, you should always finish on cold, whether that be a cold shower or a cold plunge. And that's probably going to make up at least one of his. And if he showers twice a day, he'll always finish on cold, which is really what you should do.
I mean, whatever he's doing, it's working for him. I know, like he's got a massive, massive following. Like his ratings are something like, he's got like a 20% market share, which in radio is massive. Mm. There's also a lot of people that, you know, don't like him for his beliefs or whatever. But you listen to the guy, he's upbeat. He's never sick. He's relentlessly positive and enthusiastic. And you think, whatever he's doing, he's doing it right.
He's very cognitively sharp, isn't he? When he's, you know, imagine interviewing all those people with a very short moment's notice and having to be over such a range of topics. So I think when you look at him from that perspective, someone sent, like I did a post there and I said, be like Mike, you know, because in terms
how did that go down in the comments?
Not too well, yeah. So, and I say, like, be like Mike in terms of his, you know, what his health practices are, not his opinions.
Oh, and the work ethic of both those guys is second to none. I mean, you cannot take anything away from the success that they have because they get up at shit o'clock. We're talking middle of the night, like 2:33 a.m. Mm. So they have no sort of life during the week outside of work.
Yeah.
And he's done that for they've both done it for a number of years. And they're phenomenal broadcasters. So to stay at the top of your game with those sort of grueling hours for that long, there's got to be some secret to the success. And maybe it's the hot and cold thing.
Yeah, and I do like looking at elite performers and looking at what they're doing. And sometimes it's sports people. Sometimes it's the UFC, which is a real great playground for people to be in that sympathetic or stress state. So I love like watching and observing those guys. I would never do a UFC fight. You don't have to agree with what they're doing, but in terms of a study around how they're executing their skill set and talents, it's the fighting realm is fascinating. And also you look at sport, the clutch kicks, you know, or the clutch throws in high pressure situations.
Mm-hmm. Have you done much with any of the UFC guys? Who do you know?
Yeah, well, I have met Israel Adesanya, Dan Hooker, Shane Young, because they came to a workshop that wonderful guy Jason Sutty and I did together at Jason's gym. But but I don't work with them one-on-one. They are now doing some great work with a wonderful guy called Dave Wood. And Woody is an amazing guy, really trying to bring up this notion that we can have better influence and control over our situations.
Oh yeah, I've seen what Dave Wood, his retreats look way less fun than yours. I don't imagine he's having red meat and red wine in the evenings.
Woody, he might be having a DB export or something like that. Yeah. But no, he's a top guy. Yeah. Hey, but when I was coming here, I was thinking, what could I say to help runners or maybe help them understand what the process is? Because so many runners, they feel great doing it, right? And that's what is driving a lot of their pursuit into running is the feeling they get from it, right, Dom? You feel that?
Mm, absolutely. Even on days, I don't feel great every day, but even on days where I don't feel great and I'm not enjoying it, I always feel good afterwards. I feel amazing. I never get home from a run and regret going on a run.
So what about if I try and educate people, there will be a couple of big words, on why that's happening. Okay. So I think that's the key. If people understand the why, maybe they can then program accordingly. So when we run, so we've got amino acids in our body. Amino acids, they aid in the repair of muscle tissue. But we've also got a substance called tryptophan. Tryptophan is a precursor for something called serotonin. Serotonin is what makes us feel great.
Yeah.
Tryptophan and amino acids travel on the same pathway to the brain. Amino acids will trump tryptophan all the time. So that means that amino acids are going up to the brain and tryptophan cannot get on that track to get to the brain to release serotonin to make you feel good unless you exercise. When you run, your muscles are now needing amino acids. So they come down, which frees up the track for the tryptophan to go to the brain and release serotonin. So that's why a lot of people genuinely feel happy and high and they feel great when they go for a run. So I think if people understand the physiology around how exercise can influence our mental health, then that might be a reason for people to, hey, let's give this a go.
Well, I love that. Hey, thanks for coming over today.
Thanks,
Tom. And for being so generous with your time. My God, the big words that you use, and they just like roll off your tongue. It's phenomenal. You're so well educated. Are your books full, or can you like consult new people? If someone has heard this podcast and they want to get hold of you, what's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, so I work with people in different ways. My clinic is generally booked up about a month or so in advance, but that's okay. You just wait for that time. And so you can book online, just nigelbeach.com. Very old website, doesn't really say what I do nowadays, but that's all right. I'm too busy helping people to fix that just yet. But they can book online for a consult, either in person or over Zoom. But what I also do, I do 12-week programs with people via my app. So I don't actually need to see someone in clinic. And that's another option. And then another way of working with me is I work in the corporate space a lot. So, you know, some people, if they've heard this, they might have a chat to their HR manager and say, hey, let's get this guy in to talk about some real tangible ways we can influence our mental fitness or our health. That's another way. And then finally, I do run those performance intensives down in Mount Maunganui. It's generally word of mouth, but I am going to start to open those up to people now.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. As I've said, it was an invaluable experience, and I would love to go back for another one because it was fantastic. It was really cool. I got so much out of it. There's things I do now, and I think of you. Like if I'm waiting in line at a coffee store, I'll look down at my feet and make sure my feet are both quite close to each other, like a fist apart, facing forward.
That's it.
And that's the correct way to stand. It activates your butt muscles. Just little things like that. I'll catch myself doing it, and I'll go, oh, that's something I got from Nigel.
Yeah, cool. That's cool. Great. Well, great. Would love to see you again. The kids would totally love to see you again.
So. I don't know if I can afford all the fines from your daughter. And Nigel Beach, you're a good man. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening to.
On the Dom Harvey podcast, Nigel's become a pretty good mate of mine over the last year, so I really hope you guys enjoyed that, and I hope you get something out of it that you can use in your day-to-day life to make it better than what it is now. As I say every week, I love your feedback. You can get a hold of me anytime you want, domharveynz@gmail.com or on Instagram, domharveynz. I appreciate your feedback, your tips, your suggestions for future guests, anything you've got. Even though I may not reply to all of you, I do read all of it, and it means a lot. Just before we go, quick thanks to the sponsors, Generate KiwiSaver and Radix Nutrition. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. Book to see your local Generate KiwiSaver advisor for a no-obligation meeting. Their web address, generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. I did this last month, and I switched over to Generate from a different KiwiSaver provider, and it could not have been easier. Also on that website, generatekiwisaver.co.nz, you'll find a copy of their product disclosure statement. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. This podcast episode was also sponsored by the legends and my good friends at Radix Nutrition. Mike and his team at Radix have lofty goals to improve your quality of life through nutrition, and they're doing it all from their incredible factory just out of Hamilton. Once you sample their products, I have no doubt you will be a raving fan. Check them out online, radixnutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. radixnutrition.co.nz. Alright, thank you so much for joining me for this episode, and I do hope to see you next week on the Dom Harvey podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.